D72 is the professional PC text multi-tool designed for automation in diagnostic, Windows repair, and malware removal. No other tool can help you automate more, relax more, and get paid with less effort than ever. Podnuts likes to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 371, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallisch. Today, I'm joined today by Chuck Jackals of newtoupc.com. Welcome to the show, Chuck.
Hey, thank you. Thank you.
Good to have you on. Hey, for those that don't know you out there, if you want to just tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe where you're located and how you got started in computer repair.
Alrighty. Located here in Northwest Indiana, South Bend, Indiana. Opened up shop, physical shop opened up, I guess over 5 years ago now. And at the first location, was there for about 2.5 years, and I moved over to my current location. Got started basically, I've always worked on computers and done things like that. And it just was from an issue of being unemployed and no job market and had to create my own.
Awesome. That's great. All right. Well, that's one way to get started in the computer repair business. That's for sure. So that's awesome. Yeah, I know you said you had some stuff you wanted to talk about today as far as, just growing your business. You had some tips and things on. So why don't you go ahead and get started with that, and I'll let you take over.
Alrighty. Kind of going freeform here. I didn't have a chance to get notes together today. But the key things that I say is that, that I strive for is having great customer service, and that's the number one thing.
Right.
People can be forgiving of other issues if it takes longer or parts cost more, whatever the case is, as long as they get service with a smile, that helped out a lot.
Absolutely.
This year, my plan was to grow my business. That's been the biggest thing is I wanted to grow and diversify. Well, plans started moving forward for that a little earlier, and then they fell through, and then they started going through, and then they fell through. And so far this year, things have been starting to move in that direction now. By what I mean by growing your business is a lot of the things that, there's different people in your areas that do work in the same kind of field, but not, say, computer repair. For example, I have a TV repair guy, and that I've used on numerous occasions. And he actually lived a few blocks away from me. His house had caught fire and burned to the ground. Yeah, I took and called him up. Actually, I saw the fire going on, and I called up. And I said, "Hey, that's not your house on fire, is it?" He's like, "Yeah, it sure is." Oh man. So I said, "Well, I can give you some space to work." So now I have, instead of people coming in and saying, talking and like, "Hey, do you know anybody that can fix his TV? Do you fix TVs?" I'm like, "Yeah, we got a guy right here."
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. And so, I make a little bit of change off of that. And, people come in, they see the TV sitting there, and now they say, "Oh, you fix TVs too?" "Sure do. We have a TV repair guy." "Consoles, game consoles. I have a game console repair guy. He comes in and does them." He comes in, picks them up, takes them home. He works on them overnight, brings them back. iPhones, I always do those myself in-house, but I can't stand doing the iPads and the iPod touches.
They're okay.
A little pain in the butt. So I had been utilizing an outside service where I'd have to mail them off, and the average, it'd take about 5 days to get it back.
Okay.
I partnered up with a guy that he actually I had repaired his iPhone for him a little over a year ago. And it intrigued him, so he became an iCracked rep, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, repair person.
Okay.
And so he contacted me back about doing the repairs. So now I hand off all of my iPod touches and iPads right to him, he knocks them out for me and turns it back over. Now I go, typically it's a 48-hour turnaround as opposed to a 5-day turnaround.
Oh, so, wow. Okay, that's good.
Yeah, that helped out, and I make even more off of it, so that's even better.
That's awesome you say that, because partnerships, I think, in this business can help a lot of computer repair techs out, because I know for myself, I tried fixing an iPod Touch once, and after that experience, I was like, you know what? No, never again. Not something I want to do. Not something I'm interested in. I know other people that do it, but you've got the perfect scenario where you maybe don't use the skills for doing those things, but you've got other people that do that stuff all the time and can do it quick and get it back, and then you make a little bit of money from that too. That's awesome business sense right there.
Yes. I mean, you know, there's lots of different things that, you know, you yourself may not do, like the iPad. I can do them. It's just, one, they're super time consuming for me, fresh and very frustrating. I made it an executive decision to, I'll make $20 off the deal and send it off, then to have to sit there and battle with the thing. Because some of those, I mean, I've spent 4 to 6 hours picking glass out of the side. So, I mean, is it worth making, you know, $40, $50, $60 off of it if you're going to be, you know, spending that much time on it? It's not.
Right.
So $20 for me to package it up, drop it in the mail, and a few days later it comes back. I can handle that.
Right.
Now it's a better situation. It does take as long, and I make more money off of it.
There you go. I like it.
You know, and that's the thing. I mean, there, if you don't do web design and you know somebody that does, get something, you know, linked to your site or some kind of literature inside your store, so that way when people come in, oh, you guys do WordPress sites. Well, we have a guy that does them, yes.
Right.
You know, if you don't do laptops and there's, you know somebody else that does, instead of, you know, referring the work out, just, you know, put a clause in your repair waiver that says that from time to time we utilize outside repair services.
Right. Okay.
And that way it kind of covers your butt if they go, well, what do you mean it's not there?
Right. Now, that's a good tip. Yeah, that's real good.
Yeah, I ran into that issue about a week ago with an individual tried saying that, you know, well, I didn't think that, you know, I thought you guys were fixing them right there. I said, no, if you yourself would have came in instead of sending your girlfriend in, you would have been able to read the paper that stated, you know, we utilize an outside service. I was texting with him until like 1:30 in the morning. It was ridiculous. But
do your customers actually read the whole contract that you have them sign most of the time?
I've had about 5.
Okay.
You know, but the key thing, you know, they ask, well, what else does it say? I said flat out, you know, we're not responsible for your data loss if that happens.
Right.
And, you know, you agree to come pick it up when I say that it's done. Otherwise, after 5 days, you're going to get started charged late fees.
Okay. That's good.
You know, and, you know, because I on the bottom of the repair waiver, because I have that printed out, the repair waiver, I should say, is printed out, and it's on my front counter.
Okay.
If it's available, if they want a copy of it, I'll give it to them, no problem. But they sign the intake sheet, you know, that said, that agrees that they read it, and specifically that they agree with the late fee policy, because too many times people don't read that.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I would say most of my customers, usually when I turn it over and they just kind of ask me, do I have to read this whole thing? I'm like, no. I said, it's basically all the legal mumbo jumbo that I'm required to you know, just to protect myself and to protect you. And, you know, it basically, hey, it's just a formality. They're like, yep. All right. And they just sign it and date it, and it's no big deal.
Exactly. You know, I mean, the likelihood of it ever coming down to someone needing to, you know, that happens, that something happened, they need to go back on it. I've never had it happen myself.
Right.
You know, so I'm sure it's happened to other people. But.
Well, and I have a standing policy that I don't advertise, but I have a standing policy in place. If somebody is dissatisfied with the work or – they don't want whatever was replaced or whatever, you know, I'll put the old part back in and give it back to them and, you know, and not charge them a dime. You know, if it comes down to that, it's not worth, you know, the reputation type things out there. You know, one person, you know, telling 20 people about the bad service they got one time, you know, even if it wasn't my fault. So that's just, that's one of my own personal policies.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's like Yelp. I have two great reviews on Yelp and two bad reviews on Yelp. One bad review isn't even from a customer. And the second one, that guy's fault. He brought in a tablet and was adamant about which tablet he had. It was one that I needed to send off for repairs. After it sat there for about a week, I called him up. Hey, what's going on with it? Oh, we don't fix those. You could have sent it back. And so I get it back and I'm looking at the part and it went from being a $90 repair to a $200 repair.
Oh.
And the guy got upset. He's like, so am I out my $90? He said, no, you know, shipping. Like, so what's that, $30? $20 or 50 cents, you know. And so then he, next thing you know, he takes and puts this whole long review on Yelp. I was like, well, you know, you can't please everybody.
Right, right, exactly.
But, you know, it's not my fault that you were very adamant about the product that you had, the device you had. You know, it was your responsibility. You told me what it was. I said, well, is it this or is it this or is it that? Okay.
Well, yeah, lesson learned all the way around, that's for sure. So,
I mean, that's one of the drawbacks that you do run into if you do have to utilize an outside service, is that, you know, there's other delays that you don't have control over, miscommunication. So, you know, the little bit of money that you make for being pretty much hands off, you sometimes end up having to bite the bullet on because of, you know, it might take you, you know, I spend 2-3 hours, you know, finding out what's going on or somebody dropped the ball and now you're the one that looks bad in front of the customer. But with enough smiles and, you know, you make it right, it smooths over.
Yeah. You know,
I had one person that their iPad, when I was shipping those off, it needed a logic board service because it had gotten wet. And it was supposed to be sent off. Well, it didn't get sent off. And it didn't get sent off. I'm calling and, oh, we're on top of this. You know, we got this issue. It's going to be here next week. Da, 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 da. It went on for 3 months. Until finally it comes back in. All right, well, they had the logic board done. And, well, nothing else works on the iPad. I'm like, why wouldn't you test that stuff first? Before sending it off. Yeah,
right.
it was like a final straw that really was upsetting. And the customer was understanding. She knew the situation. She knew that it'd be mailed out. She knew that from there the logic board was going to be mailed out somewhere else. And so it was a long, complicated process and somebody dropped the ball and I was not very happy.
Right, right. Okay. Wow. Yeah, that would be That would be terrible for stuff like that. And that's one I get calls all the time for tablets. And quite honestly, they're all so different that I don't even mess with them. But I'm sure a guy that, you know, that's in your area or in any area that does, you know, 5-10 of those a day, to them, it's probably not a big deal.
Right.
So, you know, I can see where the partnership would definitely, you know, come in hand then. So, but all right.
Yeah, my guy that does the iPads, all he does is Apple devices.
Okay.
So everything else is all on me or utilizing the outside service to send them off to. And pretty much how I decide is I look at the repair process and decide from there, okay, is this something I want to tackle or, you know, is this going to be something that's going to, you know, I have to take and separate everything and pull it apart? Or is it going to be cheaper for me just to send it off?
Right.
And I'll tell you one thing, the Samsung Galaxy S3 charging ports are not fun to do. I did one and, well, it worked. It took me forever to get it done and I didn't like it and very time consuming. And there's better solutions out there than replacing the charging port for it.
Okay. Well, that's, you know what? That's a good tip right there, because I've got two Samsung Galaxy S3s in the house. And it's one of those things where if mine breaks, I would probably go to fix it. But if it was a customer's, I'd be like, no, it's not something I want to do.
With the S3s, the best thing I can tell you to do is order the Qi charging pads for it. It goes in, you take the cover off the back, it lays on top of the battery, it goes in between the battery and the charging connector, put it back on together, and then you get a wireless Qi charger.
Okay.
And then it can do wireless inductive charging, like one of these here.
Okay.
Just lay the phone right on there and it charges right up.
That is a great tip. I'll tell you what, that would save time from having to pull the thing apart. I've looked inside some of the HTCs and the Samsung phones, and what I've noticed is it seems like everything will come apart, but it seems like there's a lot of screws in there, and to me, it seems like it would be worse than a laptop. Yeah, I'm pretty good at taking laptops apart. I can get them apart in about 10 minutes and get all the way down to the CPU and whatnot. But that's about as small as I want to go, I think.
Yeah. This here is a Droid Mini. This is the Qi charging.
Oh, okay. Right
here. That does the wireless inductive charging. And this one here is a screen replacement. And I didn't realize how much of a headache it was going to be when I got into it. And I'm not done. But that phone, basically the part that comes in is just like this.
Okay. And so for those that are there, obviously where this is a audio podcast, we're listening, that are listening out there, basically he's showing the back covers, and I've seen a few Qi chargers over time, and they basically will lay on a mat like surface and basically charge it up. So instead of having to plug in a little micro USB port.
Yeah, I've actually going to be ordering, because during the week that I was finalizing the S3 charging port, I had 6 calls to do that charging port. And I was like,
wow,
not happening. So
that's a lot.
It's a horrible placement for it. There's nothing to secure that charging port in place. So when you get plugged in, it has nowhere to go. Sorry.
Oh, that's all right. Sounds like things are busy.
Yeah, I guess people don't realize how to read time. It's 7 o'clock, not 6.
Oh yeah, I get people calling all hours of the night. I have to shut my phone off after a certain time just for those types of calls.
Definitely. But the growing your business, it's a matter of, if you have a physical location, a storefront, the best thing is locating a spot that gets a lot of traffic, and that you're not paying too much in rent on, because the months that it's slow, you won't eat.
right, exactly. Now, do you operate are you operating out of a shop, or are you operating out of your home?
No, I have a office.
Okay.
It's used to be a house at one point in time, but it's been office space for over 30 years.
Okay.
Everything from a dentist to a private investigator.
Okay. Now you started your business home base, if I remember correctly, and then you went to you transferred to an office.
I started doing refurbishing and selling computers purchased at an auction. I was doing that out of my house, drive out, meet people, sell the computers off. Then I opened up my first location, and was there for about 2.5 years, and it was a dungeon. And after 2.5 years, I moved to where I'm at now, and I've been here for 2.5 years.
Okay.
It was a scary move in a way, because I went from essentially having no rent just covering utilities, paying property tax, to having, you know, and of course, you know, the utilities, to having utilities, having rent, and a lot more, you know, insurances, and everything was a lot more expensive to move into here. And it was, I mean, it was very nervous. I was very nervous. It was very nerve-wracking ordeal to just, because I was moving across town. The customers, the customer base that I had there was not productive.
Okay.
It didn't make money.
Okay.
There was a lot of people that that didn't like to pay, and just caused a lot of headaches. So when I moved over here, it was just like as if I was opening the doors for the first time.
Okay.
And it took me 2.5 months to bring the income in that I was. It took me 2.5 years to build up over there, and that was, you know, 2.5 years ago, and it's, I haven't looked back since.
Wow. Okay. So business is going good for you. Obviously you it sounds like you're definitely keeping busy, and you've got a lot of business relationships out there with different people, and you're able to, you know, kind of get out there and do a bunch of different things instead of just, you know, a handful of things, which I think is great for any shop to be able to expand themselves.
Definitely. And I mean, there's a lot of people that say you don't want to, you know, have too many services offered and, you know, wear yourself thin. And that's why with like a lot of the situations that I have where I have these partnerships set up where I have a TV guy, I check in the TVs, I get a cut of the change, you know, it goes to him. He takes, orders his parts, does his repairs, calls the customers, lets them know everything, and they come in and pick it up. And, you know, so it's pretty hands off. It's not stressing me out having it here, and it's not cutting myself thin having, you know, those services. It just, and then it's a two-way street because, you know, he has a large customer base from, you know, the years he's been doing this.
Right.
And so when they come in to drop off their TV, they're like, oh, you do computer repairs. Yes. And so, you know, when people are walking out, I always, you know, say, just remember us for basically all of your electronics can be repaired pretty much here.
That's great. That's good sound advice. I think it's, that's a good way to do it. Especially, you know, I mean, sometimes we as computer repair techs, we can, be a jack of all trades, master of none. And, I think that there are certain things that people like to do and they've learned how to do and are good at doing it. And, you know, I think anybody can do that, but I think it would wear yourself thin in doing those types of things. So I think it's good to, you know, have those partnerships out there with, you know, people you can trust and different things like that. Now, if you had any problems with any of these partnerships with people or.
No.
Okay. That's good.
I've been fortunate that, no, the only partnership I ever had a problem with was my original business partner. And that didn't last long, and it turned out to be a pretty ugly situation.
Okay.
And so now at this point in time, I mean, it's not really a partnership with these individuals. You know, they're my contractors, you know, subcontractors. I subcontract the work to them, and so they either do it or they don't. If
right.
They don't do it, then I find somebody else that will.
Right, right. No, that's good. That's real good. All right. So now the things that you do in your shop, you know, you obviously computer repair. What are you finding a lot of things that are coming in the shop right now? Because I know sometimes things cycle in and out, and I'm just curious what you're seeing right now during these last couple months.
XP panicking.
Okay.
You know, that's been a lot. We've probably done 3 times as many custom builds this year to date from last year, just because people come in and, you know, we have Windows XP, we know it's dying, you know, what do we need to do? And I ask them, well, how old is your computer? Well, it's 10 years old.
Right. I get that a lot.
it's time to buy a new one. It's what it is.
Exactly.
And well, what would you suggest? I suggest a custom built system. You know, and I already have a template for what I sell. You know, for a custom built, and it gives them a better quality computer than what they're going to go buy off the shelf, and it's not going to have Windows 8.
Okay, that's there's interesting.
Another one.
Okay.
It's Windows 8 downgrades. You know, people don't like 8. They want to go to 7. And so we've done a lot of those. So that's been the two different repairs that we've had lately because of the, you know, the impending XP.
Okay.
Dead date as of tomorrow.
Right,
and,
right.
And the Windows 8, people are, you know, they know their XP is dying, so they go buy a new laptop, and they get it home, and it has Windows 8, and they can't stand it. So then they go, well, what can we put on there then? I said, well, we got Windows 7 we can put on there. You know, all the stuff that you like from XP just runs a little bit better and looks a little bit cleaner.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I think for my customers, a lot of them that are on Windows 8, a lot of them are actually sucking it up and just working with it. But whenever I'm working on their computers, I let them know. I said, hey, there's a couple little programs. We can make this just like Windows 7. And one of them is Stardock. I can't remember what they call it. There's one that's called Classic Start or something like that. I think that's
Classic
free.
Shell.
Classic Shell. Yeah, that's the one. That's the one that a lot of people use. And then I on my machine here, I use the Stardock one. And I think it's called Start 8, and it works perfectly fine. I enjoy my machine. Now, one of the things that I do as a tech, though, is I leave the Metro stuff on there so that I can go back. And when I'm working on a lot of these machines, I get lost in where I'm going. So I try to, you know, teach myself, okay, if I want to go here, basically I just got to start typing wherever I would normally go, control panel or, you know, anything like that. And, so I've got to have it so I can work with it. But that's what I've been doing for a lot of my customers. And they seem to be happy with that. Now, some of them, they're just sticking with Windows 8 and they're like, hey, you know, either they don't get on it enough where it doesn't bother them, or they've learned how to get around on the machine and it doesn't bother them, that type of thing. Now, as far as your custom builds, because I've also often struggled with this in my own business, is that I don't want to be responsible for a computer that I've built and sent out to the customer. So it's a lot of times it's easier. I'll go, hey, just, you know, get one at Best Buy, Micro Center, whatever, and I'll transfer your data over and we'll go from there. So you found that a lot of people actually do like the custom builds. And then what are you putting in these custom builds that are making people want those versus something in the store? Because I know you get a better build when you have a custom build. I understand that. You understand that. I'm just wondering how you get that across to the customers.
I tell them, you know, the warranty. Warranty, when you go and buy anything off the shelf, it's going to carry a one-year warranty.
Right.
That's all you get. And when we build a system, the least warranty that you get is 1 year. You know, you get everything from a one-year to a lifetime warranty, depending upon which, you know, components. You know, Crucial RAM is a lifetime warranty.
Right.
Hard drives nowadays, depending upon what you're using, is anywhere from a 1 to 5 year warranty.
Right. Yeah.
Motherboards, like Asus motherboards, they carry a 5-7 year warranty on them now. So once they see that, and they have no desire, especially if they have no desire to go on to 8, or if they have, you know, they use Windows XP, they're not very computer savvy. They don't use it a lot. And the switch to 8 would just, you know, be overwhelming for them.
Right.
I explained to them, you know, we put Windows 7 on there. It's just like what you're used to using before. Nothing's really changed from XP to 7. And that's the selling point. And they understand that they're going to go buy a computer off the shelf. It's going to cost them right about the same amount of money.
Right.
And
okay.
This way they have something that has a better warranty and that is more what they're looking for than, you know, all the bloatware thrown on them. Especially if it's someone that has had, you know, that has gone and bought a system off of the shelf before. They know how that ran, what problems they had, all the crap that was loaded on there. And when we give it to them, it's a whole new experience. It's you know, it makes using the computer fun again.
Gotcha. Okay. No, that makes a lot of sense. Now, are you putting, I know people can probably upgrade. Do you have a list of things you do or things you put into that computer, or do you have, you know, different builds? Like you got a basic build, a medium build, and a large build, as far as depending on what they're doing. If they were doing Photoshop or something like that, maybe they need a little bit more. So what types of processors and different things are you putting in these home build machines?
Typically, a lot of it's, you know, AMD dual core processors or quad core.
Okay.
I prefer ASUS motherboards. Always at least 4 gig of RAM. And, you know, I'd say, you know, this is the base. This is what we have to start off with.
Okay.
You know, if your budget and your needs are greater, then let us know so we can build something better suited for you. Last year I did a build that was, if all the parts that went into this, we would have gotten, this would have easily been between $3,000 to $3,500. This was a top of the line Core i7. As per the customer, he wanted to be able to hold 64 gig of RAM.
Wow. So
that was a top of the line ASUS motherboard. $200 case, memory coolers. And this was all air cooled. And this thing running, I stayed overnight one night to test the system out. I wanted to run it hardcore. And I was playing, I think it was like 64 videos at one time. It had 32 gig of RAM in there, this Core i7 processor, and it wasn't taxing the system. It wasn't even using 50% of all of its resources.
Wow.
And I could reach in there and put my hand right around the heat sink, and it was cool to the touch.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, you know, the guy had provided the hard drive, solid-state hard drive, the RAM, and the graphics card. I think we were into the system $2,000 without that.
Wow. That's a lot. I'm just curious, what type of profit are you making off of like a basic build for people that are just surfing the internet, you know, what 90% of the people do, surfing the internet, answering emails?
150 to 200.
Okay. That's good. That's a good profit margin. Okay. Now what are these machines costing the customer?
500.
Okay. So that's a good solid built machine, obviously with better quality parts than what you're going to get in a Dell or HP, even though a lot of manufacturers use the same company, whether it be Foxconn or whatever. But the thing is, a lot of those motherboards and stuff for Dell and HP, they're proprietary to their systems. They're proprietary to their box, how they fit in there. You know, so when you're building a custom built system, you know, if you've got to swap out a motherboard, that's not as big a deal. You got to swap out a power supply. That's not as big a deal. You know, you get some of these little slim machines like the little HPs, man, trying to get a power supply in there. You got this little, I don't even know what they call them, but it's like half of a power supply that you got to slip in there. And it's frustrating sometimes to even work on.
Very much so. And, you know, a lot of times, unless you're paying, you know, going to HP and ordering it directly from HP and paying, you know, $90 for their power supply, you order an aftermarket one, they don't quite fit 100%. Then especially the ones that use the little connector for the motherboard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, real thin one.
Yep, yep.
You have to get the adapter on it there.
Right.
It's a mess. It's a nightmare, and I don't understand why they have to go to that. The, you know, Dell's had some that actually had the laptop power brick that sat out, that you plugged in outside of it, had a plug to plug into the desktop. Actually, I saw an HP one that was like that as well. And that was the HP one. That one was really funny because I picked up the computer and I almost threw it because it was so light. There was no weight to this because there was no power supply in
right.
it. You know, and they use, you know, some super thin metal in there, and there's one drive, one stick of RAM, the processor, and the board, and the hard drive, and I think it was a laptop hard drive at that. So, I mean, this whole system probably weighed 3 pounds.
Wow. Oh, that's awesome. Wow. Okay. And so are you exclusively putting Windows 7 on a lot of these machines that you're building, or are you putting some Windows 8? Okay. And where are you getting your parts and different things from? What do you, who do you, do you have a supplier, or are you using like Newegg, Amazon?
Tiger Direct. Tiger Direct, where, okay. Yeah, I get a lot of stuff from there because I live in such close proximity that I call it today that it's here tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, it works great for doing the custom builds. Because I tell the customer, you know, give us 3 to 5 days. And occasionally I sold two custom build systems within the first hour and a half of being open last week, I think it was, or the week before. And the first one, no problem. But now, mind you, I ordered both of these at the same time.
Okay.
This started off to be the build from hell, because the next morning I go looking and I have cases coming in. I have processors, power supplies. I don't have any RAM or hard drives coming in. They're being drop shipped. And that could take 3 days. It could take a week and a half.
Wow.
So I went locally, bought RAM, bought hard drives. So that way we'd get it built. I walk in with the RAM and the hard drives. UPS walking in with the cases and everything else. Good timing. Open up the two cases. Now, two identical cases. Open them up. And first thing, one has a CD and the other one just has a book. Okay. Looking at the one with the CD, the top of the case is scratched up. Strike two.
Oh, wow.
Looking at the case, it's not the same case. Completely different case. It didn't have USB 3 on it. The whole frame inside of it was built differently.
Wow.
The tags on everything, though, were correct. So somehow or another, at the assembly line, that one got dropped in the wrong box.
Okay.
So I had to send it back. Then the motherboard decided that it went bad. Send that back, get another one in. The video was bad in it. Send it back, get another one in. Oh, my God. Finally. You know, I probably, in laying out the money for locally for the hard drives and the RAM, and, you know, because I'm ordering the case, you know, you have to RMA, so they have to get it back before they do anything. So I'm ordering another case. I'm ordering another motherboard and another motherboard. So I've probably laid out, twice at least the amount of money that I normally would have laid out
right.
in the custom build. It's just like, oh, my God. Finally, it got in the customer's hands. It was like, thank goodness. Hopefully, everything works fine now.
right. Okay. Wow. Yeah, that's hard to deal with that stuff. I guess that's one of the things I've always. I mean, I just built a custom machine for a guy. He basically he was doing stock trading, and here's what's funny. He had a Core i7 920, which is a fine processor. It's with one I had in the rig up before I had this one, and he's running, I think he had 16 gigs of RAM, I'm sorry, 12 gigs of RAM, because that's all it would take. 12 gigs of RAM. He'd went out and bought this video card, some big Asus something or other. I think it was an AMD video card. And he's, every time he's trying to move his mouse around his screen, now he's got three screens, but every time he's trying to move his mouse around in his program, that he programmed some of it, especially for doing this stock trading, it would lag, like really bad. So we kept the video card. I think the video card was the only thing we kept. I went and built him because he had I think it was a Dell Alienware. I went and built him a new system, but it was like $1,200 for all the stuff he bought. You know, we put Windows 8 on there and all that kind of stuff. So he got it. Once I built it, he got it. It worked for that one silly trading program. He loved it. He's like, it's awesome. Thank you. And I'm just like going, wow.
Well, that's like this guy. Yeah. That system that I built, the one that was, you know, that held 64 gig of RAM. It was a Dell Studio or something like that. It was the, you know, a Core i7 in it and everything.
Probably the XPS, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was. Did it would run fine. After an hour, it would just stop. Everything would freeze up, and it would just stop. And, I mean, I went through testing every single thing in this. And everything came back fine. And I didn't have another Core i7 board or processor to individually test those components.
Right.
So I said, look, I said, you know, we're down to one of these two components is what it has to be, you know, because everything else is tested out fine. So that's when we decided to have a new system built.
Okay.
We get this whole thing built, get it up and running. Everything's going great. He gets it home. Now, mind you, I played 64 videos at one time and all this. Well, the one thing that I guess I didn't do is in all my testing is I would restart after I did things.
Sure.
And, well, when he got it home and turned it on and it's running, it freezes up after an hour.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I'm like, what do you mean? You're messing with me, right? Come to find out, his solid state drive needed a firmware update.
Okay.
If it didn't get this firmware update, then it would run for an hour and then shut off.
No kidding.
Yeah, it took me days of digging in forums to find this out.
Okay.
And once I did the firmware update, it didn't work, which they said, it may or may not work. So then send the hard drive off. They send the new one back. So for $5 that it would cost to mail the thing out, he got a new computer.
Wow.
The funny thing is the system was for his wife to process mortgage paperwork.
And you don't really need much processing power to do mortgage paperwork.
I guess not. But he wanted to future-proof the computer.
Sure.
Oh, well, that's never going to happen, but go for it.
If you're willing to spend the money, hey, there's no problem. Well, and that's what I really tried to, when I tried to talk to my customer, I'm like, I can't believe that, you know, we had to go to a 6-core Core i7. You know, I'm like, you know, I don't know if you want to do another quad core or what, but I, you know, the 6-core, it's a couple hundred dollars more, but hopefully it's going to do what you need it to do. And I guess that's the processing power he needed because he already had a great video card and everything. So, but that is a great tip on the SSD. It shuts off after an hour, firmware update. And if that doesn't work, get that thing out for warranty repair. So that's great. That's awesome.
Yeah, that was nightmarish there. I mean, you know, it kind of makes you feel like you got a yolk on your face because it's like, you know, here we made this guy spend an extra $2,000 over something that could have been taken care of for $5.
Now, let me ask you, on the SSD, did you run any diagnostic tools? What did you run on there?
I ran about 4 or 5 different hard drive tests.
Okay.
And I ran Crucial. Crucial had a scan I ran on there. I ran Seagate. I ran, a handful of other ones. And everything reported the drive being fine.
Okay.
Because it wouldn't. It does absolutely no problems with it until the 1 hour. Then after the 1 hour, whoop, it drops off. It just freezes up. And there was no way of finding this out because nothing would report that there was anything wrong.
Okay.
100% pass.
Now, when you're running these hard drive diagnostics on, there's obviously different tests you can do. There's the actual smart data that's on the chip of the hard drive itself. A lot of times, it's really, for me, it's a gut feeling. I'll run the short test and see if that comes back. And then even if I'm thinking there's something wrong, I'll run the long test. The problem with the long test is it takes many hours, but there's a lot of times where I've found it's found enough problems with it at that point where I go, hey, this hard drive's having intermittent problems, but it is a problem and we need to replace it. So that's normally what I have in my shop. So, but I have to go by my gut because I don't want to run a long test on there every time because it takes a lot of time, you know, especially if it's not a hard drive issue.
Well, you know, I've gotten to the point now where I don't disclude problems being from not being from the hard drive, because we had a system that came in, it wouldn't power on. Check the power supply, you know, just unplug the, you know, the 24 pin and put a Molex to it or a SATA port, plugged it up, dead. Okay, swap out power supply. Plug it up, same thing.
Oh, wow.
And it was almost to the point of, okay, if it's not the power supply, then the motherboard. Come to find out, it was the hard drive. If I plugged the hard drive into an external enclosure or a toaster, it wouldn't get power.
Oh, okay.
It refused to allow power to that device. I mean, it just wouldn't power on. I was taken back by it. So I don't disclude a hard drive being the problem on anything anymore.
Right.
You know, so, and every time, you know, I get people to come in, they're having a buggy system. Okay. Well, first thing I'm going to do is check RAM and check hard drive. If it's a desktop, first thing you check is capacitors, because that's 90% of the time what it is. After that, RAM and hard drive. And the customers go, well, how long will it be before I know something? I said, well, the sooner you hear from me, the worse news I have for you.
Right.
Because I've had many a time for that short test. You know, you pop it on there, and 6 seconds later, it's done. It failed.
Yes, and yes.
I literally called a girl. She hadn't even left the parking lot yet. I said, well, it's your hard drive. She goes, you said if you called soon, it wasn't going
to be good. Right, exactly.
Yep. But, yeah, so, I mean, I have no problems running the long test. I have, you know, put it on there. You know, I always run the short test first. The short test goes back clean. Sometimes, you know, I'll skip doing the long test unless the problems persist. You know?
Right, exactly.
And I'll go back and run, okay, well, why is this still doing this? And run the long test. And, you know, be surprised at how much of problems come from the stupid hard drives.
Oh, I know. Well, you know, in my rule of thumb is, a lot of times I tell my customers, I say, you know, if this hard drive makes it to 2 years, it'll probably last 20. But it usually when you start having problems within a 2 year time period of when that drive was built. And, you know, I look at them and, you know, people are like, how's my hard drive bad? I'm like, I'm sorry. This is just a rule of thumb. This is just the way it is. Under 2 years old, there's a good chance it's going to die. If it makes it past that 2 year mark, you should be golden for the rest of that computer's life and, you know, probably beyond.
You know, people ask me, well, how can it be dead? I've already had two of them replaced.
Ooh, that's not a good sign.
No. I'm like, well, how's power in your house?
Right. Yeah.
Power has a lot to do with it. I have three laptops in here from the same person right now. All three of them are having charging issues.
Okay.
There has to be something wrong in their household, whether it's somebody running over and tripping over the cords all the time, you have bad power in the house. There has to be something there, because, I mean, how do you have three laptops that I've sold them in the past year? That one of them's already had an AC jack replaced in it. One of them's had a laptop charger replaced in it. So, you know, and now we have all three of them back in here at one time with a charging issue. There's got to be something in your house.
Right. Now you've checked, obviously, I'm sure you've checked the power supplies that they're using to see if you got good voltage coming out of there.
Yeah, that's always step number one.
Okay.
Because there's many a time I get, many times people come in, they think that they need the charging port replaced in their laptop.
Exactly.
And I said, well, did you bring the charger with you? Well, no. Well, bring that and I'll let you know if you need it.
Right, exactly.
Oh, you went from $100 charge to $35 charge. There you go.
Okay. Now, do you keep those power supplies on hand for the laptops at all, or do you kind of just order them out when you need them?
I try to keep them on hand.
Okay.
I try to keep, you know, a couple of the HPs, a couple of the Toshibas, a couple of Dells.
Okay.
You know, a lot of them are interchangeable. Right now I'm low on them. I need to order some more, but I'm just kind of torn as to which ones I want to order right now. I'm just trying to note, you know, see which family's coming in, you know, the PA-12s or whatnot. So that way it's nicer when you have a more compatibility list to go off of for the chargers.
Okay. No, it makes sense. Yeah. I probably should keep more of those on hand because, you know, there's a lot of times people need those, you know, and they're like, hey, do you have one of those? And I'm like, no, you know, and I'm like, you can either order one off of Amazon or you can go to Best Buy and, you know, pay your $80 or $90 for a power supply. So there's, yeah, I think it would be good. I've often thought about, I've gotten some really good deals on universal chargers in the past. And if you can get a good deal on them, I'm sure you could have a nice little markup in there that would match, you know, any type of laptop. It's just something I've never pursued as of yet. So
I personally prefer not to use the universal ones.
Okay.
Depending upon which kind it is, I don't trust the auto selecting for the voltage. I want the thing, if it's going to be that way, I want to be able to select the voltage because I don't trust the sensing, you know. How does it know what that really needs? It's not like there's a sign that says, hey, I only need 19.5 volts.
That's a good point. And I know even when I hook up my universal charger, now I've never had a problem as of yet, you know, for people that forget their chargers, but when I hook it up to a Dell, a lot of times a Dell will come up with a black screen going, it can't tell what type of charge is going into this computer. It's not going to charge the battery. You know, it's not a Dell approved charger or whatever. Press F1 to continue. And, you know, so I press F1 and, you know, but yeah, a lot of times I'll ask them if they're the same thing. If they're having a problem with their laptop charging, that's the first thing I do is check that, you know, check what type of voltage is coming out of there and check, you know, the wires, if there's any bends or kinks or, you know, cuts or, you know, anything like that, any chews.
You know, Friday I had this lady come in. She has got 5 Toshiba chargers off of me in the past year. And
wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it wasn't until Friday that I found out why. She's using these on a TV. Her TV that she has takes the same size tip as the Toshiba charger.
Sure.
And it works on it. Yeah, it might be working, but I guarantee you it's not the right size for that, you know? And that's why she gets mad at me because, you know, she comes in to replace it. You know, the first time, you know, when it burned up, I was like, okay, you know, warranty that out. And then second, third, fourth, fifth, like something's not right here, you know? And because she'd always come in with a laptop. Never said that it was for the TV.
Right.
So the last time, if she came in this last time, I said, nope, you have to bring the TV in or go somewhere else because I'm not going through this anymore with it, you know?
Right, that way you can match it up.
Yeah, it's, you know, you're trying to use something that's not designed to do the job that it's doing.
That's a good point because I think a lot of times, you know, you brought up a good point with the universal chargers that maybe those aren't the best things to use for different products and even different laptops. You're right, because the sensors in it, you know, and usually I think if you spend more money for some of the nicer universals, you know, they're $50, $60, $70. You know, if you're going to get a cheap one, it might not do the job the way it's supposed to do. I guess that's why the other ones are $50, $60, $70 for the universal chargers. So that makes a lot of sense.
It does. And, you know, I mean, I like, sometimes if I can get a good deal on, you know, Dell branded chargers or HP branded chargers, I'll buy those. But otherwise, I'll buy the, you know, the cheap ones. And if you're not selling them to the people at $60, they're not going to complain. You know,
right.
If they have to replace it every year and they're always paying $30, $40 for it.
Right.
They don't complain about that.
Right.
It's when they're paying you know, $75 for a charger and then next year it's dead again, or in 6 months it's dead, then they get upset. But that's why I because you pick most chargers up for, about $8.
Yeah. Most of the chargers I've bought are actually on Amazon, and I've had real good luck with those. I'm pretty sure a lot of these are manufactured all in one plant somewhere, or maybe a couple plants across the world, and that's it. And some have Dell tags on them, some have HP tags on them, some have generic tags on them, but they do the job, as long as it's getting power. And I know you were talking about not having clean power. Probably a lot of people don't really, they don't plug their laptops into a power strip. Usually people will plug them directly into the wall. So I guess, I can see where that would, where that would cause some problems, especially if you've got that, bad power, you've got some sort of brownout or something like that. It could affect the hard drive, shutting on and shutting off real quick. So, wow. We talked about some business tips. We talked about some of the things you've been working on. Do you have any favorite piece of software or hardware that you use all the time that you like to utilize?
PC Repair Tracker.
Okay.
PCRT. I bought it. I guess about 3 years ago, and three and a half, 4 years ago now, and it's been the saving grace because I just, with a quick look, you can see what's there, what's waiting for parts, what's waiting for the bench, what's on the bench, where things are at, notes are all organized, and, customer calls you up, when they call you up, you can look it up and while you're talking to them, and we replaced that hard drive 3 months ago. We shouldn't be having a problem with that.
Right.
So it saves a lot of time, and it just really helps keep you organized as far as that goes. Because organization is not necessarily everybody's forte, but that really helps keep things together. there's some things that I do maybe a little bit differently than other people with it, is all of my receipts, every paperwork that I have for that customer, whether it be from their intake slip that they sign when they come in to the receipts for their parts, I scan all that in, and it's all attached right to their work order. That way, if ever there is a problem with that hard drive that we just sold them 3 months ago, I can go back there, click, print it out. I can send it off to Western Digital, have it RMA'd. And I don't have to worry about trying to, go dig it in a file or, trying to find the receipt. It's right there.
Okay. No, that makes a lot of sense. So when you replace a hard drive, you get that receipt that you've used, you basically scan it into Repair Tracker under their account, and they've got all the information. And you do the same thing with any of the contracts and things that they sign?
Yes.
Okay. So everything just goes right in there. So you can basically type in their name or whatever, and it comes up and you go, hey, here's everything all in one shot. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. If a customer says, oh, well, I never, why am I being charged a late fee? I don't know anything about a late fee. Click print here. You signed this, said that you agreed with the late fee policy.
No, that's a good idea. Again, it's one of those things that I really need to look into, because that's the problem. I do everything with paper, sign it, I attach an invoice to it, staple it, throw it in a file, and, I need to get better at having something. Now, let me ask you this, like with PC Repair Trackers, is there any way to, if you put all the people's information in there, is there any way to send those people like emails and stuff, or coupons and different things that you sales and stuff that you have going on?
Yes. As far as like emailing, coupons and mass mailings, not directly through PCRT, but it does have the where you can download the CSV of email addresses only if you wanted to.
Okay.
Or all of the customer information. In mine, I tweak the customer download in there so that way it matches up with Google. So when I import it into Google, all the fields are correctly spaced in there. And I have their work order number, their PCID number, the type of computer they have into the notes or other field in there. Then I just use like MailChimp or something like that to do the, you know, newsletters and things of that nature.
All right. Yeah. I've heard of MailChimp. Again, it's one of those things that I really, you know, as I'm even learning and progressing in my business, it's one of the things I'm looking to, you know, look into some of these things and get a better contact with the, you know, my customers. And I think that's part of, you know, like you said in the beginning, I think the smile and having good customer service and, you know, that's all key. And then, you know, having a little bit of not overwhelming contact, but a little bit of contact with them, you know, on a, you know, semi-regular basis and just saying, hey, just thinking about you, you know, is everything still going all right with that repair? We repaired, you know, whatever, 3 months ago, and you need anything else done, and kind of keep it in the forefront of people's minds of, oh yeah, yeah, you know, I got another, you know, laptop over here that really needs to be cleaned up or whatever. You know, so that's really good. I like those types of tips.
Definitely. And PC Repair Tracker, it has service reminders that you can set up in there. So when, for example, a customer comes in, they have, we do a virus removal, we sell them on our antivirus software, and, you know, we do a tune up and clean everything up. So we select, you know, a 1 year with a 2 week warning, 2 week early notice on the antivirus software that it's coming due. And then, say, in 3 months, we send them a reminder to check their backup. And say, a six-month reminder, we have it, you know, to, you know, now would be a good time to come in for a tune-up. Here's a 10% off coupon or whatever with it, you know, maybe bring this in. So it has these things, and you can add more to it. You can customize it. And so that way, you take and go through and you add these, and then when you come in the morning, there might be, you know, service reminders need to be emailed. You just click on it, and you can look through the list to see what all is there, and you just blindly click and send them all out.
Okay. That's good. Now, did you find it fairly easy to set up as far as getting all your information and things in, or was there a little bit of a learning curve?
It's made a lot of changes since day one. It really has. As far as when I first started using it, you know, the installation went fine. I was actually hosting it locally and not on my website. So I had it on my server here in shop. And then once I decided that I wanted to start utilizing the repair tracker feature where the customers can scan and check the repair status, and also so they can submit their service requests online.
Okay.
You know, that's when I was like, okay, well, now it needs to go to the outside. And in all honesty, the only thing that really takes the longest time with getting it set up is going through and making the changes to, you know, say your disclaimers and setting up your email addresses and things, and any of the wording that you want to change to where it matches your business and what you're currently using. You know, that's the customizing part of it is really what takes the longest.
Okay.
But it, you know, if you took a Saturday and started on it 10 o'clock in the morning, you should be able to have it installed, customized, up and running, everything good to go by 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
And the install process itself was probably 20 minutes, you know?
Okay. That's not bad. Yeah.
No, it's not. And then, it supports now, where you can, I believe it does, where you can import a CSV of your customers.
Okay.
You know, so if you were utilizing, you know, QuickBooks or something else, you can import your customers, your existing customers into it that way.
Okay.
That was the hardest part when I first got into it, and I was like, you know what? I'm not going to even worry about it. You know, whatever customers I had at that point in time was like, you know, it was only like the first year, year and a half of being in business.
Okay.
And it was slow starting off. So, you know, there might be 60 people that aren't in there.
Gotcha.
Well, and since being over here in the new location, every once in a while, I get someone that walks in and says, ah, yeah, I haven't been to you guys since you've been over here. And, you know, type their name in and, okay, well, here, fill this paperwork out. You're not in our new system. Right. You know, our new system, which we've had for over 3 years. So.
Right, right. Oh, that's good.
It, I mean, I really, PCRT is just, you know, it's a phenomenal software to have to keep track of everything. I utilize the text messaging, you know, on my intake sheet. I have a spot on there that says, you must write no if you do not want us to text you. Because for the most part, I don't call anybody. I try not to call anybody.
Okay.
The phone rings enough with people calling into me, taking away my time for that. So when their repairs are done, click, just drop down, text, that's it, walk away. The text, when I send it to them, it tells them, you know, your repair is completed, our hours, and, you know, obviously they have the number.
Okay.
And if they need to call for something, then they can. But I, you know, I tell people flat out, unless specified otherwise, we text.
Right, right.
And, you know, nowadays it's, you know, pretty common. People actually prefer that because they're not getting a phone call interrupting them in a meeting or, you know, whatever they might be doing.
And they've gotten the information that they need and they're good with that. So that's a good tip there too. Well, that's really cool.
And it's really nice because if you text them, you know, hey, your laptop needs a new motherboard and it's going to be, you know, $185 plus labor. Do you want to go forth with the repair? They text you back and say, yes. Now it's, you know, you have a written proof of their agreement or say, hey, we need to, you know, wipe out your windows and do a fresh install. Is there any files on there that you're worried about? Do you have everything backed up? Yeah, just go ahead and wipe it all out. There's nothing I need. Then when you give it back to them, they go, oh, my pictures are gone. You're at fault. No. Look at this text you sent me. I'm not at fault here. You know?
Okay.
It's a little CYA, but it can eventually save your butt.
Right. Right. Yeah. Even when people tell me that they don't need anything backed up, if I find pictures and stuff on there, I generally make a backup of it anyways. You know, I'll give them a clean system back. And a lot of times I'll take, you know, Fabs Auto backup and just put that stuff back in the system. And without all the cruft and all that other junk that's in there, I might just put the pictures and the things that were in the documents folder back in there. Because a lot of times I just don't think people understand what they're actually saying, you know, or they don't really understand enough to go, oh, wait a minute, all that stuff's gone. You know, I didn't really back it up because I don't really know how to back up.
Exactly. You know, and I get approached a lot from various companies, you know, about selling online backup.
Okay.
And I try to explain to my customers the need for backing up their files.
Right.
And it's not usually until they suffer a loss that they actually realize that they do need a solution.
Exactly. I think that's across the board. I think it's been like that for a long time. And I don't know that there's anything that can change a person's mind until they've lost, you know, pictures of their firstborn, you know, child or, you know, anything like that. So, or their wedding pictures or, you know, all these different things that we have in digital format nowadays. You know, I didn't have that problem when I was younger because we were taking pictures with the actual photographs that are in albums.
Oh, yeah. You know, it'd be interesting to do this as an experiment, but you might lose your business by doing it. But if somebody, you know, you talk to them about backing up, they're like, I don't need to back up. Clone their system, do a fresh install, hand them their system back with no files. They're going to understand the need for it.
Then. Right, right.
No, and then you're like, okay, look, here. Here's all your stuff back.
That would be cruel and unusual punishment. I have to say that. But yeah, you're right. That is a good, that would be a good experiment. Because at that point they would know. Now you need to get some online backup. So, well, you know what? We're approaching, I think, about an hour and 10 minutes. So I think we're going to, you know, cut the show off. But it was great having you on. I thank you for coming on the show. And why don't you let people know where they can reach you at if they want to ask you a question or something?
Check out my website, www.newtoupc, that's letter N, letter U, number 2, letter U, letter P, letter C, .com. That's the best way. Go on there. You can submit a service request. You can contact us. There's probably 3, 4, 5 different ways to contact us on there. And that's, you know, if you want to email me, info@newtoupc.com. Google Plus, I don't know if that one is on there. Facebook /NewToUPC. The Google Plus one, that's always the tricky one.
Okay. Now you have a, for Google Plus, you have a business one set up. Okay. I'm sure people can do a search and find that. But that's cool. Well, like I said, it was great having you on the show. And if anyone wants to find me, you can find me on Google Plus at Jeffrey Halish or Twitter at TechNutPC. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, email us at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. And I just want to let you know, you can also help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. Again, your what you pay does not change, but a little bit of change comes back to the Podnuts Network to keep these shows coming to you. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show, and we'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily.
D72 is here. Go to foolishit.com for more information.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.